Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Need Some Introduction. I'm your host, Victor. And on this podcast, we do deep dives into some of our favorite shows. And currently, we are watching House of the Dragon on HBO and The Patient on Hulu, two shows that are having their ninth episodes this week. And we'll be wrapping up next week simultaneously. The next shows we'll be covering, one is going to be The Peripheral on Amazon Prime. And the other one will be White Lotus on HBO Max, the second season, coming back after the huge Emmy-winning run they had with their first season. So a real surprise hit for HBO. And they've already quickly turned around with a second season. And anybody out there who listens to this recap for House of the Dragon and gave up on The Patient, which I almost did, to be honest with you, it has been very good recently. And I honestly think it's a show that's better to binge than it is to watch week to week. And the last two episodes have been truly excellent. So if you jumped off that bandwagon, I would say jump back on, because it's wrapping up next week. We'll have the recap of episode 9 tomorrow. And it's so close to the end. So definitely check that out if you gave up on it. I almost did myself, but we did stick it out and it did pay off so far. We do hope it's going to stick that landing. But for today, me and my sister, Celia.
Hello there.
We'll be covering, breaking down and discussing this ninth episode, the penultimate episode. We're just 1 week away from the finale of this very impressive, I think, season of House of the Dragon. This episode is called The Green Council, directed once again by Claire Kilner, who directed some of my favorite episodes this season. She directed the episode where Rhaenyra goes out to the brothel with her uncle. Classy, classy. But also one of my favorite, I think one of the most interesting episodes of the show. And here she is again, doing a really excellent job, I think, with this penultimate episode as well. I know you already texted me, Celia, about the music here. I agree. I liked the music here, but more so, I would like to say that I loved this roving camera, this messenger who's seen that the son, that the king is dead and is going to announce it to Alicent's, her handmaiden, I guess you would say, her most trusted assistant. He's roaming through this castle and the camera's following him. And you could just see, first of all, just beautifully lit by candlelight. You see like the reflection of the light on the stones, but also just the immensity of these. I believe this is probably, some of this is built sets. Some of this is actual locations. And they just meld it all together to make it look like one gigantic castle. But I love the feel, like you've mentioned before, Celia, of like the scope of the show, just walking around this massive space. The Lord of the Rings show just wrapped up this week. And as I mentioned, there are some really beautiful scenes there. The formation of Mordor, the explosion of the volcano and the reddening of the sky and all that is like really, really impressive special effects wise. But it also feels so artificial in so many ways. And I, once again, what I've loved about this show, but also even back in Game of Thrones, is the earthiness of this kind of fictional world. And I just love this opening shot, basically.
Me too. That's what I was texting about. And the music. Mm-hmm. We have to talk about the music in the show. It's fantastic. There are scenes where I started paying more attention to the music, actually, as I realized how great it was. And it does have the Westworld feel. It's the same people, right?
Same composer, yes, who does Westworld. And in general, I think that the Westworld music, which is usually a riff on an actual pop song, versus you wouldn't know these were the same composers or this was the same composer if you weren't made aware of it. But I did feel a little bit of the Westworld theme in this, although I still thought it was very nicely done.
I mean, we're not going to talk about Westworld again because we are oh, God.
We might have to talk about Westworld. We might have to talk about Westworld because the peripheral is from the same writer-director team that made Westworld. So not today.
Not today, but I just wanted to say that the music in Westworld and the moods were very good.
The music's fantastic. Yes.
But anyway, the music in this series is fantastic. That opening scene is mesmerizing. Yeah. And a lot of it has to do with the music. And yes, that camera shot that you were talking about was fantastic. I was mesmerized. I fell in love with this episode.
Yeah, and I would say that, A, it's the direction here. Once again, I think that Claire Kilner has done a great job with her specific episodes. You have some of the other directors bring this massive special effect type battle sequences. But once again, I feel that she gives an intimacy. And I think they use her that way. They kind of bring her for those episodes because I think I really like the intimacy she brings and just the thought process of having this opening sequence where we're roaming around this massive expanse puts you in the head of this young boy that has to basically tell one person and then the whole cascade effect that's going to happen from that one thing. It really like puts you inside this world. And the other thing that I think puts you inside this world is that finally, one of the things that has bothered me on the show recently, these giant time jumps. You know, we went two episodes ago to the following episode. We were within weeks of them. Now we're like immediately after that episode. And now, of course, next week is going to be immediately after this one. So like now we're starting to see that momentum building. And I assume season two is going to be basically this cast in a terrible situation at war, basically, is what's going to happen.
I can't wait for next week.
Yes.
Because the way this left off is so cool. We'll talk about that later.
Absolutely.
It was very cool. Girl power.
Yes, yes. That's a really interesting theme here too, when you think about how the women are so central to all the story that's going to happen in this particular episode. And all doing great jobs from performance stand-wise. Rhaenyra's really not in the episode, but everyone else involved. All right, so Alicent gets word via the grapevine that the king has died. And she is really emotional, very upset legitimately. And I can only imagine, I mean, in my mind, I'm thinking she obviously is sad. She is someone who is actually sensitive. She did care about him. But also, I feel like there's probably like the relief of all of this, you know, not having to, you know, have sex with this corpse anymore. But also the fact that, you know, he's out of his misery, but now the hell that is going to come. So I just think that she definitely is crying for him. She's sad that he died, but also all of the complexity that is going to come into her world at this moment is also overwhelming her.
And it can't be a great thing. Do you feel like she's happy that Aegon is named the successor in her head?
No.
Because that didn't really happen.
No. Absolutely not. I think we have some clarity on some of the things we thought last week that she might be conniving or whatever. I think she knows deep down inside Aegon is not a good choice.
Not even deep down. She must be well aware,
right,
as is any logical person, well aware that this is a disaster. This can't even happen.
This is like a curse for her, by the way. It's interesting when you see that previously on the scenes from last week, Rhaenyra, they chose to excerpt the conversation she had with her dad, the specific part of it where she basically says, like, I don't want to be queen anymore, but if I'm going to be queen, you have to stand up and support me. And what I think that's interesting about that is that she's rejecting this thing. She's realizing that it's ruining her life. And I think at some point, Alicent feels the same way. I mean, we'll get into it later on, but there's an actual conversation where she overtly says that he'll be king and she's going to have to be there, rein him in to keep him from his worst impulses. Think about the onus she's putting on herself there, right? She is going to have to basically run the country via her son, but she's not the face of the crown, right? It's her son who hopefully is not going to completely shit the bed, right? Because she's still going to get the blame for that too.
But this kid is so sick. Like, he's doing the most demented things.
Yeah, it's crazy. We'll get into it. But like what his hobbies are is bananas.
And tragic. Let's talk about Alicent's feet.
Oh, yeah. Well, wait.
Are pretty feet, aren't they?
We have to work up to that.
Wow.
We have to work up to that.
Okay, we'll talk about them later.
I do want to bring up the feet here just momentarily that there was, I did not notice this, but someone had called this out on something that I was reading, which was that earlier in the show, there was the moment where she's having dinner with Larys. And as soon as she sits down to have dinner with him, she takes off her shoes. And that person was commenting on like, oh, look how comfortable she is around him. And now we realize that is not why she's taking off her shoes.
I wouldn't even be thinking that. I was kind
of
like,
of course not. No one was thinking that at the time.
What is she doing, you know? But the way it's done, she's so like used to it.
Yeah, we got to talk about that, no doubt. So she does go and see Otto, like we kind of speculated last week that she's going to have that conversation with Otto. And in some ways, it's exactly what I expected. And in some ways, it's not, in the fact that Otto has just basically been planning this out, whether he got the green light from Alicent or not. Apparently, Otto's been laying this out with the Lannisters, Kevin Lannister, and with some of these other folks who are 100% on board. We're going to take the crown away from Rhaenyra and put it on Aegon. But apparently they have not let Alicent in on their plans. This is news
to
her.
How infuriating.
Absolutely. Yes.
I mean, a few things are infuriating. The way that like the women are discounted in general, yes. Mm-hmm. Like when Rhaenyra was named, you know, successor, but still had to serve wine to these guys.
Right, right.
And now this queen isn't even in on this plan.
Right.
They didn't even think of telling her. It's not even like right. They were hiding it too hard. They're like, oh, you know, like, you know, the thing we were talking about, we'll just implement that plan. Like, it's like normal to exclude her.
And they literally say like what we've been planning for. So yes, they wanted to hear these words, which was a misunderstanding, by the way. And we see in the previously on Alicent misunderstanding what's being said. They replayed it for us to, you know, just drive the point home. Regardless, she took it as that he wants Aegon to, you know, be king. And she goes, and I'm like now cursed because I'm the only one who heard this. But Otto's basically saying, you know, in that small council room that, hey, you know, I think we've been planning on, we're doing it. So it's like they were planning on this no matter what. So that was just there. So this is just a convenient coincidence as far as they're concerned.
The most annoying part, the whole thing is annoying, but they aren't even thinking like she has a right to be in on this.
Oh, right.
Like, oh yeah, you know the thing, let's just do that. And she's like, what thing?
Right.
What's happening? Who are these assholes?
And interestingly here, and I kind of skipped past it, but if you noticed very early on, her servant girl, when she went to the room where the king's body was, she put a candle in a particular window. And we see the candle in the window, which I think is very funny because they're like locking down the castle. None of the lords are allowed to exit, you know, the small council. Rhaenys is locked inside of her bedroom. No one could get out there because they don't want anyone to know that the king is dead. And of course, it's already out. It's very important that we see that candle in the window almost instantaneously. So everybody in King's Landing via the White Worm and the like rumor network that they have going already knows the king is dead. And they're like trying to like lock this all down. But back to the small council room, we have Beesbury, Lord Beesbury, who is like the only one, maybe there are other people there who have their qualms, but he's the only one that actually speaks out.
Then we may proceed now with the full assurance of his blessing on our long-laid plans.
Yes, there is much to be done, as we've previously discussed. Now, there are two among the captains of the City Watch that remain loyal to Daemon. Let us replace them. Lord Lannister.
The treasury is well in hand. The gold will be divided for safekeeping.
Let ravens be sent to our allies, Riverrun and Highgarden.
Am I to understand that members of the Small Council have been planning secretly to install my son without me?
My queen, there was no need to sully you with darkling schemes.
I will not have this. To hear that you have plotted to replace the king's chosen heir with an imposter.
His firstborn son is hardly an imposter.
Hundreds of lords and landed knights swore fealty to the princess.
That was 20 years ago. Most of them are now dead.
You heard the Lord Hand. Plot or no, the king changed his mind.
I am 76 years old. I have known Viserys longer than any who sit at this table, and I will not believe that he said this on his deathbed alone with only the boy's mother as a witness. This is seizure! It is theft! It is treason, at the least!
Mind your tongue, Lyman.
Criston Cole, proving himself to be just a bigger and bigger shit every single week, tells the old man to sit down. He lived 76 years. This is at the end of it. And by the way, he looks great. This is quite an accomplishment for him to make it to 76 years. Look at what Viserys looked like when he was 54. He looked absolutely horrible. They have these weird rocks that they use during the small council meeting. I don't know why, but when Criston Cole shoves him down, he racks his head onto that stone and kills the old man. The Lord Commander goes to disarm him, and he goes, no, I will not be disarmed. And by the way, he ends up becoming Lord Commander before this episode is over, because the Lord Commander says, you guys are crazy. You're telling me to go and murder the queen who is actually supposed to ascend to the throne. And he's like, hey, until there is a king, I am not the leader of the King's Guard. And he walks out of there. No one kills him, though, which is something. Small accomplishment there.
I don't think that the queen's having an affair with him.
No, not now.
I don't
we see that
now.
He's like a religious, yes. But
yeah.
It is interesting to think about how Alicent uses these men. In one case, she's manipulating him sexually because he has his own deviant needs. That's Larys. But in this case, she is manipulating in her own way
Yeah, because she Kristen, says right. to do something for all the feelings you have for your queen or something right, like that. Right. He's fine to do it. And he's still on his women should be cherished. Like when they're running around in the streets and then they're running through the brothels.
I don't know how much I trust him with that when he's like saying like, I don't know.
You think he was being sarcastic?
Oh, no. I don't think he was being sarcastic. I just think he's being a hypocrite because A, he's had sex with Rhaenyra. And second of all, the fact that he's like, every woman is a reflection of the mother. We should never disrespect them. And she's like, he was calling like Rhaenyra a whore and stuff just a couple episodes ago. So I'm like,
yeah, that's true. So I think he really was, except Rhaenyra.
Exactly. Rhaenyra's a guy.
Every woman,
case.
But not Rhaenyra.
But not Rhaenyra. Exactly.
I think that is what he was thinking.
Interestingly here, before we wrap up in the small council, which is such a big part of this episode, we do see a moment where Alicent does falter. She basically cannot believe this happening. She's furious at this whole situation. But then Kevin Lannister says to her, okay, then what is your alternative plan? And she has absolutely nothing to say. So Otto just goes, we're going to kill him. We're going to kill them all. That's it.
Well,
that's
we knew that was going to happen anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So.
Meanwhile, we see Helena is talking to her kids and she's having one of these little vision weird things that has happened where she's just talking and saying things that are important at the same time. People take things that aren't theirs. They see the thing they want and then they take it, whether it's theirs or not. So it's like, of course, she's envisioning what's happening right now. You know, this power struggle. Oh, and she mentions
she keeps
again,
talking. Yep.
The beast beneath the boards. Yes. Which pays off in this episode.
She will not stop talking about it.
Well, we see what that means finally in this episode. I believe we see what that means.
I wonder what did you think it meant?
I think it's a dragon beneath the boards, a dragon emerging.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah. So now we see Eric, not Eric. We met Eric, and I cannot tell these people apart, by the way. I mean, they're twins. The actors are twins, right? So it's like, it gets complicated when they're two, they're on screen together. But Eric,
at first I was like, is it the same guy and he's playing both parts? And I'm like, no, they're two totally separate actors. They look so alike. They are twins, right? It's not like some sort of special effect.
I think it's two different actors and I assume they're twins because yeah, I mean, it just seems much more cost effective than having to do all this with special effects, especially for characters that are not that important. I don't think are going to be that important.
But that's how much they look alike.
Yes, absolutely.
We questioned it.
They could put their hair different or one could have no beard. Something to help us out here, people.
Yeah.
I mean, they look identical. I mean, like they do their hair. They both have a man bun. It's like, come on, people. Come on.
Yeah. With the same clothes.
Yeah, they're wearing the same clothes and the same disguise in town.
But anyway, they turn out to be very important.
In this particular episode. Yeah, maybe
at least symbolically.
Yeah. So Eric, who meets with Otto wants to know, where is Aegon? And everybody's like, we don't know where Aegon is. We've looked everywhere. We can't find him. Interestingly, see that even the servants, by the way, we see this like kind of a compilation of scenes where we see like Rhaenys is locked up and all these different people are locked up. But even the servants who know are like locked up in the dungeon. Like no one who knows that the king is dead is allowed to have any kind of freedom at all at this moment.
I saw that. And I thought that was funny, actually. But yeah. Then I always think, like, you know, if you're going to lock people up, you could just kill everyone. Like,
we'll get to that. You know, I wanted to actually talk to you about when you said that last time as well, because there's a very important piece of dialogue here from the White Worm, Missandei, who mentioned something. So Criston Cole is out and about, also looking for Aegon. He's out there looking, of course, for his sweet, sweet queen. And
yeah.
And Aemond goes off with him, says, hey, you know, I know where he likes to go. And of course, it turns out that he's only been out to the brothels on his 13th birthday, back in the day when his brother took him out to the Silk Street to hit the brothels because he had to get his experiences in so that he knew the ways of the world.
And then we get to meet his instructor.
Yes. And she's like, ooh, how you've grown.
Ooh, what are the chances he would run
grown.
Into
he's like
her?
He's like over 6 feet tall now. So he definitely has grown.
And we're talking like there are hundreds of other workers out there, sex workers, and we run into his, the flowerer.
Well, she's probably, I would assume she's like the madam of the house. And hey, you know, he's a special client, right? He was the prince, right? So I'm sure he got all the best that money
the
could buy.
Most skilled.
Yes, exactly. The best of the best. And this is that conversation that I think is so funny, where he's like saying that my brother brought me here to, you know, learn the ways of the world or whatever else. And Cole's like, I don't understand what you're saying. And he goes, you know, to get it wet, get it as, be as blunt about it as possible. And that's when Cole's like, oh no, every woman is the image of the mother.
He's lost his mind. He probably was never that stable. So he goes wherever the wind blows or wherever he needs therapy for sure. We can't take anything he says seriously. And he's just like a bomb. He's just like smashes people's heads onto tables and pulls out his sword for every event. So he's nuts.
But he's loyal to the queen. So she's smart enough to know that
he's like a mad dog.
He definitely can be, but at the same time, I mean, he also has some skill, right? He's trained Aemond to be a great swordsman, right? So it's like there are some positives here too.
He has purpose.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Otto goes and meets with the rest of the lords and basically says, here's what's going to happen, guys. And you're all going to bend the knee, right? And of course, anyone who doesn't bend the knee ends up dead or jailed.
Yeah, that was the whole scene.
But we do find out as Eric and Arik are roaming. They do know, indeed, Arik does indeed know where Aegon goes. And while Kristen Cole and Aemond are wandering the streets, pretty much out of options, not knowing where else to look, Arik has brought Eric to his new favorite place to hang out, which is where they go and they take little kids and
that
they file their
crazy.
Teeth.
Crazy.
They file their teeth and make them fight to the death.
They file their teeth and insane. Nails, and yes. Aegon's little offspring are like spattered about.
They're there too. Exactly. He's
was
like,
that little, was the offspring watching or he was going to fight?
I think these are part of the kids who fight. So he's like leaving them behind.
He was like five.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the kids in there were like 10. So it's like, they're just a matter of time before he matures into this kind of crazy peewee gladiator league they're in.
I don't mean to laugh, but wow, what an imagination.
This is totally bananas. Like, this is like,
yeah, that the writer of this scene. Yeah, they're just flinging kids into the sandy pit, just flinging them in there. I wonder how much training they get. Like, they file their teeth and their nails and then immediately fling them in. Or there's training like a gladiator camp for them.
I don't know. Maybe it's just a fight to the death. I mean, like, they're just, you know, desperate because it's a fight to the death, probably.
Yep. So that happened. That's not great. But at least someone's sticking up for them.
And and Arik and Eric are, they're both disapproving of this. You know, Arik knows about it and is like saying, this guy's going to be the king. And his brother's like, this guy's a piece of shit. Yeah. So it's like, they're both like pretty unhappy with this. Although one's still following orders and the other one in the end will not. There's an interesting scene here where Aemond says to Cole, he should actually be king, but he actually pussyfoots away. He doesn't actually say the word king.
It is I, the younger brother, who studies history and philosophy. It is I who trains with the sword, who rides the largest dragon in the world. It is I who should be...
I know what it is to toil for what others are freely given.
Mm-hmm. And we can't find him, Cole. We are decent men with no taste for depravity. His secrets are his own. He's welcome to them. I'm next in line to the throne. Should they come looking for me, I intend to be found.
He should be king. Talk about having, you know, how he has big Daemon energy. Think about it. Daemon was the second son also. Although the weird thing about Daemon was that even though we all worried that Daemon really wanted to kill his brother and take over the throne, he actually had those opportunities and he never did. He supported his brother. He like even went and fought that war for him and everything and then disappeared. Like, he didn't take any rewards for it. So I think in the end, Daemon did not want to be king, even though he was upset that he was overlooked. I think Aemond might actually try to take out his brother. And guess what? Unlike Viserys, who actually turned out to be the peaceful king, that's what they call him here. But even though he turned out to be decent, I mean, in his own way, not a bad king, I don't think Aegon is going to be a good king at all.
How great is his transformation from, I don't want to be king. First of all, I'm going to hide because I want nothing to do with this. And then, okay, starting to accept the fact. And then he realizes, whoa. You know, these people do whatever I want.
Yeah, it's all that adulation he got. So yeah, we'll get to that. We'll absolutely get to that. But interesting when you think about that specific point about Aemond being the, saying he should be king, because of course that's not how lineage works or how the hierarchy of the king works. You have Aegon and his kids, right? So it's like if he wants to become king, he's got to get all the Who's kids out of the way too. So there's going to be a lot of deaths between him and that. And hey, I don't know. I've not read the book, so I don't know which way it goes. But maybe that's part of his plan in the future. So who knows? Interesting sequence here. Very small scene here between Larys and Otto. Otto kind of calls him out. Hey, you've been spending a lot of time with my daughter. I don't know if he's aware of any of the weird stuff going on or if he's just calling out the fact that he's become, giving a lot of counsel to Alicent.
I don't think he's aware of the weird stuff.
I doubt it too. But Larys says, hey, what's good for the queen could also benefit you. And then Otto thinks about that. The next thing we see is Alicent in the room with the king's body, which apparently stinks. I mean, I must have stunk before, and that stinks even more. She's still very upset. And, once again, understandable. I mean, her son, who is supposed to be crowned king, may very well be dead for all she knows at this moment. And her husband's died. And everyone's been like conniving behind her back. And she's been totally unaware of what her dad, who she can no longer trust anymore. So she is having a really rough time right now.
It's just too much responsibility for her.
Yeah.
She never even wanted this to begin with.
Right.
So it's funny, though, that nobody really wants this burden.
Right.
Like Rhaenyra really would prefer not to have it. Daemon thought better of it. The peaceful king never wanted it.
Yep, exactly.
Alicent doesn't want it. But everyone feels responsible for being the head. So, I mean,
someone has to, heavy as the head.
Someone has to do it, yeah, but it's who's the best choice? Right. Everyone thinks that somehow they can control the outcome the best, but no one wants it. Nobody wants to do this.
Right. The funniest thing is you have all these people conniving who to be close to power, like Otto wants his son to be on the throne, his grandson, to be on the throne, etc. But like you said, the people who actually are going to have to do the dirty work, they don't want it. Right. So this is a really good scene. I think it's maybe the best scene in the whole entire episode. It's when Alicent meets with Rhaenys, and she is impressed by Alicent. Alicent comes in there and she makes an impressive offer. She says some smart things. She says, hey, look, we can make an offer that doesn't hurt Rhaenyra too much. She's thought this out. She's gamed it out. And I'm pretty sure none of these other players here have tried to come up with any other outcome other than killing off Rhaenyra. And Rhaenys goes, you know what? You are smarter than I thought. You have this all figured out, but you are still doing all this for these men. Have you ever thought, why aren't you going to be the one who sits on the throne? Which of course is what Rhaenys supposedly was supposed to have, right? That was supposed to be her crown and they took it away from her. Supposedly there's all this succession, there's all this way of doing things, but because it's a woman, all of a sudden all the rules go out the window, even though the rules as written are that including women, but they're like, well, we'll just ignore the rules this one time whenever a woman is in line to succeed, right? So it's just interesting that we see this again.
If it's Driftmark you want, you should have it. For you and your granddaughters to pass on as you see fit. You are wiser than I believed you to be. Alicent Hightower. A true queen counts the cost to her people. And yet you toil still in service to men. Your father, your husband, your son. You desire not to be free, but to make a window in the wall of your prison. Have you never imagined yourself on the Iron Throne?
And it plants a little seed there. I do wonder in Alicent's face when she's so worried about what is to come that maybe she should be thinking, wait a second, if I'm the one who's calling the shots, maybe it's better for everybody in a way, right? So I don't know. I don't know if that's going to play out that way.
But she must know. She's smart. Yeah. She's not going to let the mad son just rule the empire. Can you imagine? So if she wants him up there, she has to rule the empire.
I think Rhaenys is saying like explicitly that she would rule the empire, right?
I don't know, because would anyone allow that? Technically, her right. son is
That's the
king.
Problem. Exactly.
She would have to guide all his decisions. So technically, she is ruling.
Well,
Rhaenyra
is. Rhaenyra is, right? But yes, through via her son, she could potentially be the one who's really has all the power.
Yeah.
Then we have the scene you mentioned earlier, Otto and the White Worm meet. This accent, oh my God, such a terrible job with this accent. I don't dislike this actress. I've seen her in other things. But oh my God, I hated it. This accent's just terrible. Regardless of the absolutely appalling accent that no one has coached her away from, it is an interesting conversation point that she says to Otto. First of all, I know the king's already dead. So that proves that she is who she says she is and that she can control these spies. And more importantly, is that she wants to do something good. Like you said, she goes, there are these horrible things happening in our town.
Where's the prince?
He is safely tucked away. I want an end to the savage use of children in Flea Bottom. They are forced to fight, and worse. Your gold cloaks take the bribes given them to look away. An obscenity. Either tolerated or ignored by the crown.
I look into it. You have my word.
When your plots ripen and you install your grandson on the throne, remember, it was me who put him there. I could have killed him as easily as a wasp on fruit. There is no power. But what the people allow you to take.
I will remember.
So the idea is that all these people will go with the flow because they don't want to run this country either. And they want somebody to be calling the shots and they want to have a kingdom and they want to be able to brag that we live in this kingdom and we have this economy, we have this any other thing. But that's because they say, yes, it's like, the way a democracy works too. Not that this is a democracy, but, we see
it. I find it odd that she doesn't understand that those who have the dragon will rule the world.
Right.
Do you have a dragon lady?
Oh, right. Well, that's one person, but I'm talking about the entire countryside, right? Like the point is that,
I know what you mean, but.
I mean, and by the way, spoiler alert for the whole entire continuity of this, that the people can overthrow these dragons, right? As a matter of fact, they can kill all the dragons, right? By the time we get to Game of Thrones, there are no more dragons. They've all been killed. And that's because the people rose up, right? So she is planting seeds here saying, like, don't get too big for your britches. If all these people, hundreds of thousands of them, and you send your knights, your 10 knights down the street with their swords, if 100,000 people pick up rocks and throw rocks at them, all those knights will be dead. So it's just a matter of time. So remember, you have to keep that in mind. But pretty coincidentally here, as Otto is meeting with the White Worm, Kristen and Aemond stumble upon them having the conversation and basically start following them. And therefore, they all show up where Aegon's been sucked away in the chapel or the church, whatever it is. And it's pretty funny when he's been found out, he like runs away pathetically. Very, very funny scene of him running away with these two guys behind him. And then, of course, we have this battle between Kristen Cole and Arryk and Aemond, who's going after his brother. So this kind of the four of them fight it out, but Arryk abstains. And that's the difference maker here. And what ends up happening is that Kristen Cole disarms Arryk. And another interesting interchange here, we see that Aegon says to Aemond that he is unfit to be the king. And he's like, just leave me alone. If you just let me go, you can have all this. I'll just disappear. I'll just get on a plane. I'll get on the first boat that I find. The first dragon I find, right? And I'm out of here. And this could all be yours. And you see Aemond think about that for a second, being like, oh man, like I may have screwed up in my plan today. And then Kristen Cole's like, grabs him by the scruff of the neck and goes, you're going to go talk to your mom. But we are left with that shot of Aemond contemplating.
Well, if they make his brother king, can't he just chop off his head or something and then just be the successor?
No, he's got his kids, remember? So there's still, it has to go through the kids too.
Oh, okay. So yeah, he did screw up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Aegon saying that he could just disappear, then his kids would still be in line for succession. So it's not so easy. Still, Aemond still just can't just step in. That's basically what it comes down to.
That's true.
Then we have a great scene, between Otto and Alicent, where Alicent basically says, you know what?
We will send terms to Rhaenyra on Dragonstone. True terms, such that she may accept without shame.
If she lives, her allies will mass behind her banners, looking for her return.
Then she must not return. My husband would have desired this mercy be shown to his daughter.
Your husband? Or you, his daughter's childhood companion?
Criston Cole will be named Lord Commander of the King's Guard. My son will be anointed tomorrow at dawn. The whole of King's Landing must witness his ascent. He will assume authority. There will be no more dithering. My son will take the crown of his namesake, the Conqueror, and carry Blackfyre, his sword. Let the people remember the ancient strength of House Targaryen.
You look so much like your mother in certain lights.
I've outplayed you. I've outmaneuvered you. You, you know, undermined me. You never let me in on this plan. And now we're going to do things my way. And she completely outmaneuvered him. And his response is, you know, sometimes you remind me of your mother. She just rolls her eyes at him and walks out of the room. It's
awesome. That was a perfect reaction.
It really was.
She's not going to deem to
even engage
in this conversation.
Which he's manipulated her, by the way, if you go all the way back to those earlier episodes where he does always bring up her mother, you know, when there's like, you know, when he was trying to get her, go put on your mother's dress and go seduce the king, you know, like all that BS. And she's just like, okay, it's not working anymore. She just rolls her eyes and walks out of the room. It's awesome.
That's real life. You know, when people do the same thing, manipulative, like over and over, you just start being exactly like that. Like, oh, yeah, I know.
Immediately after that scene with her dad, the next scene we see, we have finally arrived. Larys shows up at Alicent's room and she's like, the hour is late.
Like,
it has been a very, very long day.
Like, I can't do this right now.
Yeah. And he's like, I have some news for you.
Just go right. I'll take off my socks.
Okay. Well, she does it a little bit. It's like a striptease, right? So she takes off her shoes.
She did. Yeah. It was like sexy removing of socks.
She takes off her shoes and then he starts saying, well, you know, I have a little bit of information.
Like staring intensely at her toes.
Like Quentin Tarantino. He loves toes, feet and toes.
It was kind of a sexy scene with her stripping them off gently.
I did not think it was sexy.
Near a fireplace while he caressed them with her eyes.
And then he caressed himself. Ugh.
Yes. So creepy sexy again. That's what happens. It's all creepy sexy. And she puts him on up on that coffee table thing that is.
Bring it to the light. Yeah. Like he gets
there it is.
You get to see all the separation between all those toes.
It's amazing.
That's what I'm talking about. But his information he has here is that Otto was a step ahead of you because there's a spy network in the town and Otto leverages that spy network. He doesn't own it. He doesn't create it, but he uses it for his own means. And he says the only way to get rid of a spy network like this is to decapitate the queen, which then he apologizes for right away. It's very funny. He's like, oh, sorry about my use of terminology. Because when the queen dies, the bees don't know how to, I'm like, oh, sorry, excuse me, queen. She's very annoyed, almost in her voice. She goes, and I assume this is something you can do. She's like, and he's like, yes, I can. And we do see later on the lair of the white worm, the home where the white worm stays, that it's up in flames at the end. So my first question is, you know, what's your guess here? Do you think that she's dead? I don't think so, right? I think she survives, right? The spy queen.
I think she should survive, whether she does or not. My assumption is that she will, because it would just be better for the plot.
Yes. And I also assume, by the way, you think about how this spy network existed even in Game of Thrones, right? Like Varys controlled these spies almost 200 years later. His assumption that, hey, you know, you kill the queen and then all the bees are disoriented, which is true to some extent, right? The bees don't know how to organize once that happens. But I assume someone else will jump in there. It's like, you know, when you have, you know, let's go to the Wire as a metaphor. Once the guy who's the king running the drugs in that neighborhood, once that guy gets killed off, you know, oftentimes by his competition, in the shakeup immediately that comes afterwards, someone rises to the top, and then the network just comes, starts plugging back in again, right? Everything starts running again. So it's like, I think it would be the same way.
I agree.
You're not going to turn it off when you have hundreds of people who are, like, you know, basically getting paid to tell stories. If they still want to get paid, they just have to pick a new leader.
Exactly. Everyone's replaceable.
Exactly. So yeah, I don't really buy into his theory of the case here.
I love the scene where Rhaenys is running through the streets and realizes that this is fascinating, the view of what's happening from down here with the people.
The reason she gets so happy is because she also knows where she's headed. It's the immediate next scene. And it's pretty funny when Eric shows up, speaking of the Eric thing, I'm like, I don't know which one of these guys is who this is. So I don't know if they're going to try to kill her or if they're actually going to try to escort her out. But it turns out it is indeed Eric, I should say, and who was the one who abstained from the fight earlier. And he says, I won't stand for this. And he tries to get her out. And once again, I was worried for a minute there that she was going to get killed off. But no, he actually does try to rescue her, gets her to the end of town. And this is actually where we see that the White Worm's lair is burning. There's all this craziness going on in the streets. I think that Eric actually at one point thinks that they're rounding people up because they're looking for her. He starts to panic. They get separated. As we start to discover, oh no, this is the coronation ceremony that both Otto and Alicent have basically agreed that the best thing to do at this point is to simply call him King Aegon and get it out there as quickly as possible. Because at this point, if you have two contenders, the one who simply grabs the throne first has an advantage instantaneously, right? So that's their plan. Let's just do it. Let's announce the king is dead and who the new king is right now. Let's just do it. But you see, like you said, Rhaenys is very happy. She goes, oh, I know where I'm headed, because she had said to Eric, I need to go get my dragon. And Eric goes, there's no time for that. And now all of a sudden, after trying to escape the city, all these people are being herded to the septum or whatever they call it, the center of the city, which of course is where they hold the dragons as well. So she's like, oh, what a convenient location for us to all go to meet.
Exactly. The dragon is under the boards. The beast under the boards. That's right. That's the way it was.
And before we get there, we see that Aegon and Alicent are sitting in the back of this carriage being driven right past her, basically, headed towards the coronation. And he's all like mopey. First of all, he looks like Jack White. I don't know if you know Jack White from the White Stripes when he had his hair white.
He does. Yes.
I'm like, definitely want to, like, I'll excerpt a White Stripes song here at the end. And he's with that mopey face. Did dad love me? Did you ever love me? So there's a moment there.
She doesn't even say yes.
She just calls him an idiot. But she does have this little smirk on her face where, you know, there is still some aspect of her. I do think that she's like, when she calls him an idiot there, it's affectionate, I think. You know, he directly asks, did he ever want to make me king? And she goes, he told me that. And once again, she did believe that. And he goes, well, how come he never mentioned that to me for the 20 years that I knew him? Which is true, because I think that Viserys knew that this guy's a piece of shit. And he did not want him to be king, for sure. This crowd shot is pretty incredible. You know, not only the crowd shot in the streets, but then, you know, this is probably special effects, but, you know, there is definitely a blend of real people and special effects. And the sequence where they're all inside of the, you know, the center, and, you know, and he enters to be crowned is a pretty impressive shot for sure. And by the way, they must have spent a fortune on this particular episode. Maybe they just saved some money on some of those episodes where they were having the small council meetings, because this movie, this episode was immense, huge. For a second there, I was like, how does Cole get to place the crown on the guy's head? And I remember, oh, that's right. They made him Lord Commander. So that kind of makes sense there. Rhaenys makes her escape after she's like, okay, nobody's looking now. Everybody's kind of distracted, all looking the same direction. I'm just going to sneak over this way. And then that's that moment you talked about, Aegon, who's been like, I don't want to do this. And by the way, you know, when they first say his name, everybody, crowd's kind of like, huh, wait, I thought it was gonna be Rhaenyra. And then when he gets crowned,
they do look confused.
You see people start applauding, and then people start to really applaud. And then he pumps his hand in the air, just like Jack White does as a White Stripes concert.
That's what it was. Yes. It looked just like that.
Exactly. And then he's, wow, like, this is pretty awesome. You know, I don't know. I was a bit afraid of this all the time. And Otto smiles, and even Alicent smirks a little bit. And everybody's like, hey, everything's going to be just fine. And then a nuclear bomb goes off in the middle of the septum, killing probably thousands of innocent people.
That was an awesome scene, though. It was amazing.
And it's Rhaenys emerging from under the boards with her dragon. Now, here's the next question I have for you. And the dragon screams in their faces, but she does not say Dracarys. She does not tell her dragon to burn them. And my question is, why doesn't she just incinerate everybody on stage at this moment?
I was wondering that too. Wouldn't it just be it ends, so much easier?
There's no war. There's no war. It ends the war. That's it. End the
Zero.
Story. Yeah.
And Rhaenyra isn't going to get mad that she did this.
Absolutely not.
So why not do that?
Most of the people in the city probably think that this is a power grab, right? Everybody's saying this. Like, people who want this to happen are like, bullshit, I know, but it's okay. I'm on your side, right? No one believes her. No one believes Alicent at all, even though it actually did happen. Or it's her understanding that it happened, I should say. So given the fact that that's how it all is, I mean, Rhaenyra, they may not like that, you know, a woman is going to be queen, but people have accepted this for the last 20 years. It was their expectation. So they would have internalized it. And, you know, and once again, everything that happened inside the castle after his death, like how they tried to rush this thing and the way they locked everybody up, all that stuff would be out. You know, all the people who work in there, all the spies who work in there would have been saying, hey, they locked me up. They didn't want people to know that the king was dead because they were trying to do a power grab. Everybody would buy that 100%. And if she said, yeah, that's exactly what happened, that's why I burned them all, because they were trying to take the throne away from Rhaenyra, A, people would be like, yep, I believe that's what happened. And B, even people who wanted Aegon to be king, he's dead. So end of conversation, right? So that's it. She could have ended this whole thing right now.
But she did not. Maybe she has an ulterior motive. It can't be sentiment fear.
I mean, I literally think they're playing it as if it is the sentiment when Alicent steps in front, that she's like basically, you know, making a decision there based purely on sentiment. Which, by the way, is, if that's the case, is a terrible decision on her part. Because, well, first of all, like, let's talk metatextually. We hear about it in the original Game of Thrones. This is going to be the Dance of the Dragons. It's going to be all the Targaryens fighting with each other. And by the end of this, the Targaryens are incredibly weakened. Basically, all the dragons in the world are dead. So there's going to be massive, massive, massive war that's going to basically nearly wipe out the Targaryens completely. And she could have avoided all of that. And I know that she couldn't do that in the reality of the fact that, you know, the Game of Thrones books already exist. You couldn't do that. Then you would basically erase all this history that we know is going to come. But my question is, you know, in the moment, since this is what's been written, are we supposed to be that she just didn't do it because she couldn't pull the trigger? Which then is very ironic when you think about the conversation she had with Allison, saying, Allison, don't you want to be the one who calls the shots? And she has the chance at that moment to change the course of history, and she doesn't do it. She doesn't do
Maybe
it.
She doesn't think it's up to her to play God.
That's what I think that's the most realistic argument, is that she's just like, this isn't my decision to make.
I mean, she would have to be strongly on the side of someone to go and burn down everyone in line here. I mean, is she even really on Rhaenyra's side, or she just finds her to be the best option? How invested is she in the whole kingdom? I mean, she was supposed to be the queen, but then she wasn't. And if it was me, I would just be like, is it my place to play God? Or maybe she just wants everything to be fair.
You know, once again, everybody has their own ulterior motives. First of all, she may just purely say, I was supposed to be queen. This place wouldn't let there be a queen. If Rhaenyra is queen, then at least there is now a template where someone else like me in the future, one of my daughters, maybe one of my granddaughters, right? Not my daughters, my granddaughters, could potentially be a queen, right? Second of all, Rhaenyra already made the deal with her that we are going to marry your two granddaughters to my to their cousins, basically. And one will become the queen of Driftmark, and the other one will be the queen. Like, hey, pretty fucking awesome, right? So that's the best deal she has. What does she have if Aegon is king? She gets nothing. She gets absolutely nothing. She may not even get Driftmark. You know, she gets nothing.
But she won't think that he'll be in control. She probably thinks his mother will be in control. So maybe she can navigate that.
But I'm saying that she would not have any leverage. Like, Aegon's already married off. Aemond, you know, she doesn't, I don't know if she wants to marry any of her kids off to her or if the offer would even be made, to be honest. And then I don't know what succession is going to be look like at in Driftmark, because now, of course, his brother's dead. Corlys's brother is dead now, so he can't take the throne. So maybe she does have a play for the throne there. But I don't know if he has other brothers, if he has other relatives that might support her grandkids, because they're related and adopted parents to Daemon. So she'd probably have a place to live, but she wouldn't have any power, right? Imagine she lives on Dragonstone with her granddaughters and she's just there hanging out with Rhaenyra. She still does not want Rhaenyra to die, because Rhaenyra, she's basically under Rhaenyra's protection. Rhaenyra is definitely the better option for her is what it comes down to.
So she should have burned them all down.
I do. I think, yes, absolutely.
I think so too.
Absolutely.
I do.
Absolutely. She gets everything she wants, if you know, and I'm not talking about like Rhaenyra. Maybe someone assassinates Rhaenyra and yada, yada, yada. If someone kills Rhaenyra, then that means that like her granddaughter, right? Because then Rhaenyra's son becomes the king, and that son will be married to Rhaenys's granddaughter. Once again, she is now the, you know, like the queen at that moment.
She should have done it. Plus,
yes,
Rhaenyra would have
absolutely
been like, oh, thank you.
Rhaenyra would be like, thank you so much.
Thanks for doing that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
It's not like she'd be like, you burned my brothers.
Right.
I think she'd be like, what were they doing?
Oh, no, she absolutely.
All right. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And so we'll see.
And Rhaenyra may not have wanted to be that brutal. It's not even like she's going to have a rumor saying they were going to try to take the throne away from you, Rhaenyra. Trust me. And Rhaenyra has to just believe it. They were literally at his coronation. She knows exactly what's
Rhaenyra
going on.
I think Rhaenyra would be fine if she
absolutely
burned them even before they got to the coronation. She'd be like, all right, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
So what? I'm ascending now? Great.
Right. Exactly. So next week, war. The war begins. Once again, we're not doing some crazy time jumps or something. We see in the coming attractions, Rhaenys is talking to Rhaenyra. So she basically says, this is what happened. And they're coming for you. They're going to come and try to kill you. Like, she's basically giving her a warning, a heads up. And of course, this will lead to the Dance of the Dragons, which is going to be a giant bloody battle amongst the Targaryens. And that will, I'm sure, is not going to happen next week. It's going to start next week, and I'm sure it'll drag out for seasons, I would assume. Oh, one more thing I wanted to bring up was, it turns out that Viserys was indeed a seer. Remember, Viserys had that vision of his son taking the crown. And he thought I saw it. I believed it. And it was wrong. I thought I was someone who had visions, but it turns out I was incorrect. Not true.
That's right.
Not true. It happened. So
yep.
He did have a vision, just not the son he expected, but it still happened. So, and that is the episode. And we have one to go. One more before the season wraps up.
It's been a nice ride. I'm psyched.
It has been. This was a real best of all the episodes, and it's been pretty solid all the way through. So pretty excited about that. Anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think we got this covered.
Yeah, I think
you
so.
You did a good job.
Yeah, I had lots of notes this time. Lots of notes. And we will watch the first episode of The Peripheral this Friday, based on the novel by William Gibson and showrun and produced by Lisa Joy and Christopher Nolan's brother, Jonathan Nolan. And Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, first of all, married to each other, and second of all, the producers and creators of the Westworld show, which could be very, very worrying, because this is a very bad direction that Westworld went in. However, that first season of Westworld was pretty great. So, hey, maybe we get a great first season of The Peripheral, and we'll see how that goes. But I am curious. It's 8 episodes. Okay, well, maybe it's not that short. But this, we'll have this through early December. Previews look pretty interesting. Yeah, and we will start covering that this upcoming weekend, and maybe some more horror content. We'll see what else is coming out on Shudder or in theaters. I just had, if anybody missed this, I just broke down, spoilers and all, the movie, Halloween Ends, which just came out this weekend, which is pretty bad. If you are going to see a horror movie in the movie theaters this holiday season, I think this is going to be the decision that most people are going to make anyway, whether I recommend it or not, is to go see Smile, which is definitely a much, much better horror film. And once again, has incredible word of mouth. It just keeps chugging along. It's going to make a fortune, a very low budget film that is going to leg out to hundreds of millions of dollars, doing great in the US and overseas. And I'm sure there will be sequels. That's all I got.
I still have to see Smile, but yep.
Wait for Halloween.
There's always, oh yes, that's a good idea. It'll give me something to do on Halloween.
Yeah, it'll still be out for sure. It's doing great.
Maybe I will do that on Halloween.
Smile will probably do even better than it did this week. And yeah, I think it's going to keep doing that for the next few weeks, at least
that's
through Halloween.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, yeah. Check it out. And then we can talk about it. I have not done a spoiler review of Smile. I could do that later on. All right. Thanks for the conversation.
All right. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.